Here come the lights. We've got four, five red lights in Spa, and the Belgian Grand Prix is go with a great reaction time for Leclerc, who's got the lead, and Perez had to chop across Lewis Hamilton. That's a lock-up for Carlos Sainz. He's very close to being tipped into a spin there. There is minor contact there with Oscar Piastri, who's damaged the front wing. It is Charles Leclerc who has the lead. It is Sergio Perez, who's got a mammoth run, and dropping back through the field is Piastri with damage to the front of the car. Look, they're all being slowed as they go through Eau Rouge. Not what you want to see as you make your way through there. And now we've got a battle for the lead. The Red Bull pulling out of the slipstream. Sergio Perez going to the lead of the race. Fine margins between them as he gets past. Nothing Charles Leclerc could do.
And Verstappen does the same move on Carlos Sainz just behind. So Max Verstappen up to fourth position. It's a little bit brave, I think, from Piastri coming in on the inside here with Sainz. He's just pinched between the Mercedes and the McLaren. Sainz locks up and Piastri doesn't want to be sticking a nose in here.
I don't know what he was doing. I was there and just turned in like I didn't exist.
Not there enough, I don't think. Sticking a nose in on the inside is, you're always liable for that sort of position. And Carlos didn't have another opportunity not to do that, really. He had Hamilton on his outside. He's going to have a good chance to pass Carlos Sainz. There they are, top of shot now. DRS open.
And Fernando Alonso pulls out of the slipstream, goes to the inside. That is slam dunk. That is fifth place.
Big move.
Whoa!
Stroll on Norris.
Stroll laid on the brakes. He sent that from downtown. That was miles back.
So Norris is really dropping as well in this part. He was seventh behind Alonso earlier on. He's going to get dubbed by Russell now.
Russell will get to the apex first. Lando Norris, second in the last two Grand Prix, has found himself on the back foot all weekend long. Norris goes up to 10th. But Alex Albon in a straight line, it is preposterous, that Williams. It's 12 miles an hour or 20 kilometers per hour faster than anything else. And now further back, Aston Martin versus Mercedes, Stroll versus Russell. We've got loads of moves here. Yuki Tsunoda's going around the outside of Carlos Sainz, and Stroll's going to hang on to the place, but he goes deep. Will Russell be able to come back? He's soaring away, but there's no way through, and the Aston Martin is still ninth. And he's got the move to the inside at the final chicane. The limping Ferrari has no way to defend. Sainz is going to tumble down the entire field here. He's staying with it, but that is going to be a really, really tough afternoon for him at this point.
Lando Norris pits then from 11th place, and here goes
Verstappen to the inside of Lewis Hamilton, who tried to close the door, but that Red Bull is rapid in the hands of the driver chasing 8 Grand Prix wins in a row today, and that move will go a long way to securing it.
And Hamilton, in theory, could have defended the inside there, but there's just no point. He'll fall further away from Leclerc, and the next corner, he'll be a sitting duck for the Red Bull again. So let's see then. He's going to open the DRS shortly. The Ferrari is pretty good in a straight line, but the Red Bull surely is going to be coming at him with the DRS open.
Gaining with every meter, but will he be sent the long way round? Is there a chance of defence? Will we go wheel to wheel? Charles Leclerc can offer no defence. It's a Red Bull 1-2. Max Verstappen, he's now gone from sixth on the grid to second in the race. We want to see if Albon can get past Yuki Tsunoda, because we're looking further back out of the points, but in the points, I can tell you, it's 0.3 seconds between Albon in 11th and Tsunoda, and here's the move, here's the chance, and there's the pass, and that could be for P6 in the Grand Prix later on, as Ocon making his way by. He's in 12th, and there's the move for Daniel Ricciardo getting past his old teammate at turn 5.
Hülkenberg's going to have a run at Alonso. These two had a bit of a fight yesterday, and Hülkenberg is not in the same race really as Alonso. Hasn't pitted yet. It'll be much slower now, but it's going to frustrate Fernando.
Around the outside goes Yuki Tsunoda for one of his best moments of the entire season. Albon's got a rocket ship on his hands, but Tsunoda had the drive, had the DRS, and he retakes the position that he lost through the pit stop sequence. The man who started in sixth position last year, he won here from 14th on the grid. Sixth today, looking to take the lead on lap 17. We ride through Radion Corner. We're getting closer to the back of his teammate with every meter that we run. Now we're going to get DRS, and there will be nothing that Perez can do. Max Verstappen takes the lead of the Belgian Grand Prix. Easy as you like. First place in the race on lap 17 for the driver who started in sixth.
Russell's finally going to clear Lance Stroll, is he? Stroll defends the inside, Russell to the outside.
Stroll doesn't want to give it up. Oh, that was close. As the Mercedes sweeps by and Russell does clear the Aston Martin.
And this rain will last for around 10 minutes.
Umbrellas are up on the Kemmel Straight. That's a long way from Stavelo. This is the longest lap of the year. Here's a chance for the overtake. Stroll in seventh, Gasly in eighth, no longer. The driver who was third yesterday moves up to seventh in the Grand Prix, but still yet to come in and make his stop. We're on board with Max Verstappen. The rain is coming down. Are we about to see a big moment as he goes through? And that's how easy it is for your Grand Prix to end.
Norris versus Sargeant. The McLaren straight line speed is absolutely appalling compared to the Williams. He's going to have to get around the outside.
Can he find his way by? Sargeant tries to close the door, but Norris to the inside of nine. And even though it's raining out there, he will comfortably make his way through. It's been coming down for a while now. They're waiting for it to stop, and George Russell comes in.
Are they going to go for inters, or are they going to go for a new set of slicks?
It's going to be slicks. It's going to be the soft tyre. So they're all just trying to make their way through the rain. Everyone is on the same page at the moment. It's Yuki Tsunoda up against his old teammate. These two got along famously when they were part of the AlphaTauri setup, but it is Pierre Gasly being passed by the Japanese driver, who is having a superb run and is up to sixth. Fastest lap for Max Verstappen. He just ticks the last box remaining, having taken the fastest time in qualifying. Is there a chance for a wheel down there? That would be brave if Gasly tries it. Albon, fair, gives him the room. They're still side by side, and Gasly will surely take the place if he can get on the power earlier. And he does so. Tidy move, Pierre Gasly. Ocon had a good run. Whoa, he's feeling really brave. What a move that is from Esteban Ocon. That is absolutely outstanding. He just pressed fast forward. That is extremely clever car placement for the Frenchman. Esteban Ocon with his best overtake of the year so far. This is a review of Esteban Ocon taking the place away from his good friend Lance Stroll. They get on very well outside of the racetrack. The Dutch driver will see the checkered flag first once again, and he celebrates across the line. Max Verstappen wins the Belgian Grand Prix. 8 Grand Prix victories in a row, only the second time in the entire history of Formula One that's happened. It will be a 1-2 for Red Bull Racing. Sergio Perez coming home for podium finish number 33 in Formula One. Charles Leclerc comes over the line to confirm that third place finish. Hamilton is about to complete the 19th and final corner to see whether he can take that fresh medium tyre all the way to the end and steal the bonus point for fastest lap. And the answer across the line is that Hamilton manages to do so.
This is the Outlap F1 podcast featuring America's own John, James, Andy, and Deanna. Your one-stop shop for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews. Join us on the Outlap.
Welcome into season 5. This is episode number 24 of the Outlap F1 podcast. Kind of feels like that last day before Christmas vacation. Where you got to go to class one more time, one more day. But we are part of the Ship It Studios podcast network. We are going to go into and dive into the Belgian Grand Prix. It's our 2023 Belgian Grand Prix review. You've got Andy, and I'm once again joined by my preview co-host and co-host extraordinaire, Mr. Cody. It's good to see you again, sir. And how's it going?
It's going well. Enjoyed some really early racing, if you count the sprint shootout. Enjoyed some Dungeons and Dragons all this weekend. So, yeah, nice weekend. Revitalized, ready to get back on it on Monday, I guess.
Yeah, I will say it was one of the more gratifying F1 post F1 race naps that I've had in a long time. Normally they only last, it's usually like a power nap, about a half an hour. That one was 2 hours, especially after watching that, just all of the different sessions throughout the weekend. It's a little odd, but we'll get into all that in a little bit. So if you found us, thank you. As a reminder, you can find our show, and we're still calling it Twitter, by the way. I refuse to call it whatever name it is. That's where we are. We are on Instagram. We are on Discord. We are on Reddit. We are also on Threads. I'm trying to get Threads going. I don't think they've got the hashtags working quite right yet, in the same way that other social media platforms do. But I'm working on it, trying to do as many things. I'm waiting for them to do a desktop site. Once they get their desktop site up, I can really do threads. Trying to do it from the phone is interesting. Let's put it that way. So I'm doing the best that I can with that, but we are there too. And of course, YouTube at Outlap F1 Podcast is where you can find us across the board. See our link tree and our show notes for all the links to the various places. If you're on YouTube, do us a solid, click the like and subscribe button. And if you're on your favorite podcasting app, a 5-star review and even some comments would actually be appreciated, because it helps us come up a little bit better in searches when people are looking for F1 stuff. And it also helps us get our content to you that much quicker. So that would be a great thing to do. You can email our show, as always, chatnow@outlapf1.com. We'll take you there. You can peruse the wonderful website, www.outlapf1.com. We'll take you there. Just as a general thank you, as we are always super happy and grateful for our monetary supporters, thank you so much to Dean Warwick, Yuri Dolchester, Paul Weaver, Quentin Warden, Kevin Kelly, Regan Stanzik, Timothy Brown, and of course, Jonathan Scott. If you'd like to become a member of what we call the #OutlapF1Nation, see our link tree. It's our anchor page, $1, $5, whatever you'd like to do. Again, all of it goes back into the show, helps us make our stuff better, helps us buy some new equipment, and try to push the show forward. So if we would be most grateful if you'd like to do that. So again, see our link in our show notes. A reminder, you can use our code OUTLAP. It's OUTLAP, one word. Get 20% off and free shipping from the good folks at Manscaped if you are into those types of products. They're really good. And our final sponsor, the F1Guy.com, our buddy Vincenzo Landino, his shirt line, F1 quality merch, and not necessarily the F1 quality price. It's hard to find sometimes, so go ahead and check that out and see if you like some of his designs. It's pretty cool stuff, especially if you're a Ferrari fan. I know Vincenzo's a big, big Ferrari guy. All right, so enough of the particulars. So this was actually quite a long weekend. We have a lot of running to break down throughout the course of the 3 days. So we'll start with the headline of the day. And Cody, I will give it to you.
My headline of the day is pretty similar to a lot of my headlines of the day for previous races. So I'm going to say it again. It is the raging Red Bulls. And what better way to go into the summer break than undefeated and with a 1-2 finish? They are truly unstoppable, it seems.
Yeah, no argument with that whatsoever. My headline was, actually, this race was a bit of an outlap first. If you've been a follower of the show, you usually know when I throw my hat, that tends to be when I think it's kind of game over. And this was the first race that I could ever remember doing this, where I threw my hat in the first third of the race, and somehow, some way, one of my McLaren boys manages to recover and scores points. Usually when I throw my hat, it's pretty final, but this was anything but a straightforward weekend, and we will get into all of that in just a little bit. Before we do, we normally don't do news in a review, but this being the race before the summer break, sometimes news tends to drop on you, and it did this weekend. Alpine, wow, talk about some hot mess turnover going on in the public eye. Why they didn't wait until after the race to announce this, I don't know. But here's kind of a breakdown of everything that happened. Otmar Szafmáur, Alan Permain, and Pat Fry are all out. Pat Fry was also announced as a Williams technical advisor who's going to be coming on board with them. So he didn't go without a job for very long. Otmar Szafmáur looks like he's going to have at least 12 months of gardening leave before he gets to go anywhere else. And Alan Permain, I've not heard anything about where he's going to possibly end up, but I assume he's got some gardening leave as well. Bruno Famin is now running the team as of now. There's lots of rumors talking about, there's this guy from Ferrari who's kind of out of a job. His name is Mattia Binotto. Maybe his hat's in the ring as a replacement. Nobody really kind of shot it down. So that means, of course, it's going to happen next week, right? So, Cody, what's your take on all this? It did odd timing and a bit of a mess.
It definitely makes Alpine look like, at least higher up in the organization, that they really don't know what they're doing. Because I seem to remember that even outside of this year, for the past bunch of years, there's been a lot of turnover at Alpine in the management positions. So I think it shows that they've got a lot of stuff to work on, and that there's some pretty big disagreement between how the team is being run and how, you know, CEO and company wants the team to be run. I think it was perhaps a little unfair to, like you're saying, we're going into the summer break. Why not just wait another couple days and then can him? And, you know, it won't be in the middle of the race weekend, but that's exactly what they did. They couldn't wait, it seems. So there must have been some pretty stark disagreements going on there.
Yeah, I know I've heard some stark comments from Alan Prost, who, you know, that's a made guy. And you have to wonder when he says Alan Permain or Laurent Rossi doesn't treat anybody like a human. That's pretty damning. And Otmar has been not shy about it. He basically said he went in and said, look, we have to pivot like a lot of other teams have done. This is how long we think it's going to take. And the upper management said that's too long. And Otmar's out after only 18 months. I mean, you got to think it takes somebody coming into that job 6 to 8 months just to get used to and to learn all the names of everybody, to really get up and going and to start to prove your worth. It's shocking to me that they just decide that heads start to roll that quickly. But, I guess this is what they wanted to do. Yeah, go ahead.
When he came into the team, didn't he say something like they made a 100 race plan or something along those lines? And
it's supposed to be like a 5-year plan. Yeah.
Yeah. And they haven't even gotten halfway to that before they decided, you know what, that's not going to work. It's like you hired him. He gave you an idea of how long it was going to take. And you're not even going to see that amount of time through, or at least not even halfway. It's like, you got to give him a chance to do what he actually wants to do, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it feels very much unfair to him. And I think the team technically is not, they're not bad. I mean, the car is not necessarily really awful, but, you know, they have some things going against them. One, they don't have any other engine feedback other than their two drivers. And, you know, that becomes a little bit narrow. Mercedes has six sets of people who they could talk about, you know, engine modes and stuff with. And in terms of their aero, they've brought lots of upgrades to the car. So it's not like they haven't been putting stuff in the pipeline and bringing it to the car. And on its day, that car is not bad. It can be on the pace. It proved it a little bit this weekend, believe it or not. So, you know, it to me, it always seemed like there was always, they tended to fumble over themselves a lot. Some odd calls here and there, some strategy decisions that didn't necessarily make sense. So I don't know, maybe this is the best thing for them. It feels like a very rushed decision. So I don't know that I necessarily understood it. I would have liked to have at least, like, if you're going to do this type of thing, you know, let Otmar see out the rest of this season and at least try to put some stuff in the pipeline for next year. But yeah, I mean, he's going to be on gardening leave for a while. He will be a sought after, a hot commodity, you'd have to think, in the next, you know, maybe a year from now when the gardening leave ends. So yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see what happens with Alpine, but a bit of a tumultuous time for the French mark right now. All right, so we will get into the first of the qualifying sessions. This is the thing that happened on Friday, and boy, does it feel like a long time ago. So Friday morning, in a bit of a delay, pretty much all of the sessions, we had the rain. The rain definitely showed itself up and was a big factor all weekend long. So this was the first qualifying. The traditional qualifying went as follows. So going out in P20 was Nico Hülkenberg in Haas. P19 was Daniel Ricciardo. P18, Logan Sargeant. P17 was Zhao Grandyu. P16 was Alex Albon. Advancing through to Q2 but going no farther in P15 was Esteban Ocon. P14 was Valtteri Bottas. P13 was Kevin Magnussen. P12 was Pierre Gasly. P11 was Yuki Tsunoda, just missing out on the top 10. The top 10 from 10 to 1 in P10 was Lance Stroll. P9, Fernando Alonso. P8 was George Russell. P7 was Lando Norris. P6 was Oscar Piastri. P5 P5 was Carlos Sainz, P4 was Lewis Hamilton, P3 was Sergio Checo Perez, P2, just missing out on pole, was Charles Leclerc, and in P1, with a lap time of 1:46.168, Mr. Everything, Max Verstappen. All right, Cody, big takeaways from the traditional qualifying on the Friday.
Oh, let's see here. I got a couple. It was kind of nice to see Max Verstappen, you know, going into qualifying, have a grid penalty, because then we knew that even if he gets pole, which he did, and we all thought he would, he's still not going to start on the front row. So it, you know, was going to add a little bit of spice to the race, at least in the beginning. It was also a little interesting seeing Max Verstappen look like he was almost going to get knocked out in P2. I believe he came through in what, P10 in Q2?
He was in 10th, just survived
in there. Yeah. I was thinking, oh my God, that would be completely insane if he, you know, got knocked out in Q2. So he's 11th. He gets the five spot grid penalty down to 16. That would have really made for an interesting race, because I don't even know if he would have been able to come back from that. But alas, here we are. He still squeaked through, and then he turned around and got pole by, I believe, a pretty ridiculous margin. Yeah, like 0.8 seconds over Charles Leclerc.
Yeah, 0.8 of a second. I mentioned close. I think that was the sprint qualifying, actually, which we'll talk about in a minute. But this one, the track had continued to dry, and by the time we got to Q3, it was pretty much going to be a slick session. You know, the dry line had definitely formed, and the lap times had gone way down. And yeah, it didn't look like from the first couple sectors that it was that great a lap, but my God, in sector 3, woo, he just pumped in purple after purple after purple mini sector. And yeah, 0.8 of a second. He basically blitzes the field and says, here I am, come find me. And nobody was close.
Yeah.
And I mean, nobody. I mean, other, you know, a bit of surprises. I believe this was the session where Ocon broke his front wing. So that was, you know, more Alpine trouble, at least early on that Friday. Daniel Ricciardo actually would have been safe. He would have made it out of Q1, but he had his lap time deleted.
Yep.
So, you know, you kind of had that going on as well. And it was very much a session of being on the right tire at the right time. So, you know, you could not bank on your time being good, because it was constantly, the track was constantly evolving and getting quicker every time. So, there was really no safety. Some guys, you know, it took until the very, very end to even get a lap time necessarily on the board. So, yeah, it was a stressful session, at least I thought so, at least for qualifying. But, yeah, that set the grid for Sunday. And then we took our little detour, as it being a sprint weekend, and we'd have the sprint shootout, which was also delayed by about 35 minutes due to the track being too wet. Notice I'm saying too wet. We'll talk about that in a minute, but we'll go through the sprint shootout, which saw... All right, in P20, or actually, he didn't even get a lap in this time. Nico Hülkenberg in the back of the field yet again. P19 was Joe Grandjean. P18 was Kevin Magnussen. P17 was Valtteri Bottas. P16 was Yuki Tsunoda. P15... Again, not making it into Q3 even, was Fernando Alonso. He did not even start the Q2 session because he wrecked. Or no, he didn't wreck, but he did not come out. P14, that was Lance Stroll. He did not finish because he wrecked. P13 was Logan Sargeant. Did not set a lap time. P12 was Alex Albon. He did not set a lap time. They all got caught out by the Lance Stroll wreck. Now I'm actually, the mind is working, and now we're going. All right. P11 was Daniel Ricciardo. He was the only one that managed to set a lap time, but it didn't make it through. The top 10 from 10 to 1. P10, George Russell. P9, Esteban Ocon. P8, Sergio Perez. P7 was Lewis Hamilton. P6 was Pierre Gasly. P5 was Lando Norris. P4 was Charles Leclerc. P3 was Carlos Sainz, so good showing from the Ferraris. P2, hello, how you doing, Oscar Piastri in the other McLaren. By 11 milliseconds off a pole, but there he was again. He is Thanos. He is inevitable. It's Max Verstappen in P1 with a lap time this time of 1:49.056. All right. I have a couple rants about the FIA, what they were doing with this session, but Cody, I'll let you take it from here. What were your thoughts on the sprint shootout?
I thought that the shootout qualifying was actually very exciting. I kind of wish that the shootout qualifying results and the regular qualifying results had been flip-flopped because, you know, I think the sprints are okay. It was a little bit of a buzzkill to have that, you know, really exciting sprint shootout results right at the end there, you know, only be meaningful for the sprint, which is, you know, as it turned out, was only, what, like 11 laps, really. So that was a tiny bit of a buzzkill, but holy cow, was it exciting there at the end. I was on the edge of my seat thinking Oscar Piastri had it, would have had his, I mean, does that count as a pole? Not really, I guess.
It's not a pole, but it's the fastest in that session.
Yes. He would have had his first one of those, and it would have been really,
yep,
really
yeah,
cool.
He would have.
But alas, yeah, it just, you know, as it happens, Max takes it away at the last second. But yeah, other than that, you know, delayed, it's a good thing because I don't think I was going to get up, at the crack of dawn for that anyway. But yeah, overall, I thought it was a pretty exciting session. I'm still not 100% on board with the, you know, the sprint shootout qualifying being there in the first place, really. I think, you know, I didn't really think there was too much of an issue before where it, you know, pretty much matched the regular qualifying grid or whatever they were doing before. But it seems qualifying has overall been very exciting this year. So I guess we're getting double of that, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a fan of knockout qualifying, boy, this is a weekend for you, man. I mean, by the time you get through both sessions, you're kind of like, okay, can we actually go racing now? Yes. I've seen the time trial. I know who's fast. I know who's not. But I mean, some very odd decision making by our friends over at the FIA, and for the most part, I would say this season they've kind of stayed out of the limelight, which has probably been a really good thing. But last week we saw the alternative tire allocation. And if you go back, you have to remember when they rolled this out, what you were supposed to get was two runs of mandatory in dry running medium tires and then a mandatory soft tire in the sprint Q3. So SQ1 and SQ2 were supposed to be done on medium tires. The difference being is once the track is declared wet, you can now run basically any sort of tire you want. And we saw that happen. We didn't get a chance to do an Austrian review, which, you know, it just was what it was. But we would have talked about this then. It took the tire thing that they wanted to set up so much and threw that out the window. Because what did everybody do on a drying track? They ran used sets of soft tires, mm-hmm. which is the right strategy call to do. If you give the teams freedom, maybe this tire has more grip than that tire. Well, who cares if it's new or used? That's still better. You would have probably seen that exact same scenario. In fact, you probably should have seen that exact same scenario play out, except that we delayed the session for 35 minutes because the track was too wet, but the FIA, and I will give credit to one social media admin who picked up on this, the FIA never declares the session wet. So when Lance Stroll goes out and tries a slick tire, and crashes, by the way, which catches out his teammates, Logan Sargeant and Alex Albon and Daniel Ricciardo, and basically anybody who hadn't gotten in a banker lap at this point, he had no choice but to go out by regulation on a new set of medium tires. The track was obviously way too cold for that because it had done nothing but rain all weekend. So even though the sun was out, you really didn't have a whole lot of track temperature. And when the FIA was questioned about it, they said, oh, yeah, we meant to do that. We wanted to keep the air quote spirit of the rules as written. And to me, that just crosses the line. Your job, FIA, is to sit and enforce the rules as is. If you're delaying a session because it's too wet, you better frickin' declare the track wet. If you're getting involved in this mandatory tire crap that I hate, It's driving me crazy. It drove me crazy last week. I was happy that, you know, we had the delay. I'm like, oh, everyone will get to run the soft tire and we'll actually see it, a real decanting and a real order here. Mm-hmm. And instead, the FIA now thinks it's going to make its own rule up as it's going along. And this is exactly the crap that they get accused of doing. Well, here they just did it. And that's wrong. I thought it was a terrible decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. It's like, you know, you can't go with the rules that you want to run under conditions that it's not meant for, right? Like if the track was, like you said, if the track is too wet for you to run the session, once it starts, it's probably still pretty wet. Like you should probably call it like it is, that it's wet and that therefore you can do whatever you need to do. But yeah, and they really messed that one up, and Lance Stroll paid for it. I usually harp on Lance Stroll for being kind of a crappy driver, but I think this time he was more caught out by it being a crappy FIA decision.
Yeah, I mean, he may have wrecked anyway. I don't know, but he should have been given the chance to go out. Like, if you're going to take that risk, he should have been able to try to get into Q3 on the best possible tire in that situation, which was a drying track. There was a dry line, but there were still parts of that track that were still wet. You were still seeing rooster tails. So I applaud the gutsiness and the gumption to give it a shot at that point. And, you know, had he completed the lap and maybe it going faster, everybody else might have gone and done the same thing. But, you know, from just the perspective of you being the FIA, you got to stay out of that, man. I mean, if Liberty and the teams want to come up with some weird ass mandatory tire allocation and they vote it through, okay, fine. But when the conditions aren't for that, you can't force it like that. That's just absolutely not what we're trying to do. And you know, that coincides with another thing, is you see how immature these regulations were. Like, they literally, I don't think anybody thought of, well, what happens if it's really, really wet? Mm-hmm. What do we do then? And the broadcasters, again, this is like takes me back to 2021, where nobody knows the rules. Nobody had done any sort of research on this. Everybody thought they knew something, and they, like, the international feed, at least the Sky broadcast, and I usually love the Sky broadcast, but there were some people out there that were just guessing. Like, you'd think you would have a producer in your ear going, no, that's not how this is going to go. Crofty, stop talking, for the love of God. And you know, they're literally throwing out guesses. Well, we think it's this. And then Crofty goes, well, why was Stroll on the soft tire? And now here's where I'll give my credit to the McLaren admin, because they mentioned it right at the beginning of the session. They goes, it's interesting. The session hasn't been declared wet, but everybody assumed that we were just going to run inters for all, you know, all three sessions. So nobody even thought about it. Mm-hmm. So when that happens and I see Stroll on there and Crofty's questioning it, I'm like, no, this is why. This is exactly why, you know, this stupid thing. But anyway, enough of the negative. We do have some positives I want to talk about. World, again, meet Oscar Piastri. And if you hadn't figured out that this guy is pretty darn good when you give him a car, watch that Q3 session. That was one of his best laps, I think, of his F1 career, probably one of his best laps since probably his F2 days for sure. Just missing out by 11 milliseconds. I loved the picture he put on Twitter where he's like, it was that much.
Yeah, I actually saw like a drawing or like a mock-up of what 11 milliseconds looks like on the track. And it really actually, I think it had the top five drivers on there with, you know, Max Verstappen right on the start finish line and the other drivers behind him by the amount of time that they were behind him. And it's like on track is nothing between Max Verstappen and Oscar Piastri. It's inches. And it's incredible that it's that close between them. But yeah, really good on Oscar Piastri for making it that close against Max Verstappen in the Red Bull. I mean, it's, yeah, he really outdid himself this week.
Yeah, so he started in second place. We then had another delay because we thought we were going to get a dry sprint. Sun was out, cars are on the grid, they're ready to go. And then about 10 minutes before the session, the skies darkened, clouded over. Rain opened up. It was actually quite a heavy rain. I do agree with the decision to delay the session there. You didn't want to send anybody out. But now we run into yet another interesting part of this. So because we delayed the start of the session, that means you have to then start on the full wet tires. This was my prop bet, by the way. This is what I thought was going to happen Sunday. That didn't end up happening. But because of that, we got the rolling safety car start. They did one formation lap. They then decided that they were going to do three more formation laps, which of course means you, by rule, have to tick off the race distance because the cars are only so full of fuel. You know, you would literally have cars not being able to produce the fuel sample and all getting disqualified if you actually did it. So I understand that. But hot damn, everybody still hates the wet tires. You couldn't wait to get off of them. And I think even Mario Isola from Pirelli kind of sort of agrees. It says, you know what, if that's the rule, this is what we're kind of going to be sacked with, you know, stuck with, because the intertire is just so much better as a performance tire versus the full wet, which is meant to be an emergency grip tire. So, yeah, we kind of ended up with everybody wanting to get off of that wet tire. It was just a question of what lap. Half the field basically comes in on the first lap of racing, gets on the wet tire. The other half comes in on the second lap. But lo and behold, Oscar Piastri actually manages to jump Max Verstappen. He's up by about 2-something seconds. I'm thinking maybe, just maybe, because there's not going to be DRS, he might be able to do it. And then, sorry, I'm not trying to do it. I'm trying to think who wrecked. It was Fernando Alonso who wrecked, who brought out the safety car, bunched the field back up, and on the safety car restart, Max gets Piastri relatively easily going up into the top of the hill there where the McLaren was not set up to perform. And, yeah, fait accompli. Yeah. But still, oh, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, you pretty much hit the nail on the head. I thought it was really funny how absolutely no one wanted to be on that wet tire or give it a chance. Like you said, half the field went in at the start of the race, including Piastri, and got that in or on there right away. Max Verstappen thinks, you know, the other half of the field think it's an okay idea to try to go around one lap, see if there's anything we can gain on the people making pit stops, and then go in there. Also might have been to, you know, try to have a less congested pit area or something like that. But Max goes around, didn't get a whole lot of good time on that intermediate, or sorry, he on the full wet didn't get a lot of good time. Meanwhile, Oscar Piastri does a really good outlap on that intermediate. It gets some pretty good distance on Verstappen, and it looks like Verstappen's having a little bit of trouble catching up. He's only got, you know, not a ton of laps to catch him. And yeah, like I said, I was in the same boat as you, thinking like, oh, it could happen. And then you had the safety car, and they're all bunched up, and then there's no chance in hell.
Yeah, normally I like to cheer a safety car because that usually means, hey, a chance to catch back up. But in this case, I was like,
damn,
oh,
a safety
no.
car, a chance to catch back
like,
up.
I was like, maybe VSC, you know, he's wrecked it. That's not a VSC. So, I mean, it's the right call. Yeah, they had to do it. Like, you know, I just blasted the FIA earlier. That they had to do. But yeah, I mean, it was good that at least Oscar kind of settled back in, didn't make a big deal about it. You know, I think, you know, actually being in the starting position is something he hadn't done in a long time. So I'm sure he will learn from that. He'll get to analyze it. I think he would probably approach that a little bit differently. He'd probably try to jump a little earlier to try to build more of a gap. But man, that Red Bull. You could look at the end of it when you could see them all in Parc Fermé, and the Red Bull's tires looked like they could go another 20 laps. Mm-hmm. And Piastri's tires looked like they were screaming to come off of the car. And you just see how nice that car is on its tires. And you just go, wow. You know, Adrian Newey is freaking good.
He is the goat.
The car. Yeah. As in aerodynamicists, that's your guy. And he's been doing it for 40 years. My God. But yeah, I mean, the only other significant thing, and I do want to talk about this a little bit, again, the FIA, I thought they had themselves not a good Saturday. They make that odd call with, and that I assume is a race direction call. And then the one bit of actual wheel-to-wheel racing we got, other than Verstappen overtaking Piastri, really sort of was the move between Hamilton and Perez, and Hamilton's trying to send it up the inside. That's what you want to tell a driver to do. The gap was there. I thought he'd established position. They touch. Perez gets the worst of it and ends up having to retire the car because of it, but that's because he decided to try to hang it on the outside. And I think if you decide to try to hang it on the outside, guess what? You assume a little bit of risk doing that. But the stewards didn't agree with me or a lot of people, apparently, and decided to give Lewis Hamilton a 5-second penalty. And I vehemently disagree with that penalty. That's not what you should be wanting to promote. I read a really nice piece by Chris Medland, who is one of the F1 journalists who I you know, there's lots of people out there who you can read. He's one of the best. So go check him out, follow him on whatever social media platform you can still do that on. Simply because, and he wrote about the same thing that says, look, we put these sprints in to make entertainment. And then we have a bit of entertainment and a bit of wheel-to-wheel battle. And now we've said, don't do that. And other drivers now are going to take that as precedent and say, well, okay, I'm not going to risk it in the sprint. Why risk a penalty when that's just going to kill the result? So, disagreed with the penalty. But Cody, your thoughts on the sprint and the incident between Hamilton and Perez?
I agree with you that I think that the penalty was unwarranted. We've seen drivers much more aggressively push other drivers off the track and get away with it. And I guess, it was a wet track, wet-ish. But at the same time, it wasn't really being that aggressive or egregious. He was going for the move. They were running side by side. He, didn't give him a lot of space, but wasn't pushing him off the track. And it's wet. It looks like he lost the car a little bit and ended up hitting the side of Perez because he was there. And it is unfortunate that it was enough damage to knock a pretty good size hole in the side pod of Perez's car. And we saw that hole was enough to really significantly impact the performance of the car, because Perez just fell like a rock throughout the rest of the sprint. So that's bad for him. But really, to me, it's a racing incident. He wasn't doing anything particularly egregious. It's just it happened. He got a little loose and he hit him. Like, definitely wasn't worth the 5-second penalty, in my opinion.
I mean, I don't know where you're expecting Lewis to go there, especially since, there is this precedent that's out there. And it's always, it seems, with a guy like Checo, who's always on the outside trying to keep it in there. And, you've seen it in the last maybe 4 or 5 years where they always want to favor the guy on the outside. To me, I think once Lewis establishes position, which he clearly did, that has to become his corner. What else are you trying to promote?
It's always like you have to be up like halfway alongside him or something like that. And if that's the case, you have to give him room.
He clearly was there.
Yeah.
I mean, he clearly was there. I didn't get it. I mean, I know, the social media went berserk after that, and I expected that as much to happen once I saw it. But I agree that that's not a penalty, and that shouldn't be a penalty. And I hope future stewards groups don't take that as precedent. I have a funny feeling they will, but, let's hope for cooler, calmer heads kind of later on down the line, because I don't want to see that.
One last bit about cool, calm heads. Oscar Piastri really cracked me up after the sprint, because the announcers are all excited for him. Like, wow, you finished 2 in the sprint. This is the first time you finished up this high. And he's like, well, yeah, I don't know if it really counts. Like, it's not really a podium because it's not really a race. So it feels okay. It was cool to lead some laps. It was like, man, like, you could get a little more excited about it. Damn. He's very mellow.
Yes, he is. It almost feels like, he feels like that guy who just kind of goes, hi, I'm a racing driver. I almost won today. How you doing?
Yeah, pretty much.
And that's fine. When it comes to, he never gets flustered. I've yet to hear him be, even when the car was dog crap earlier this season, I never heard him get frustrated. I never heard him at the pit wall going, guys, come on, we got to do this or that better. He's just kind of taking the feedback, learning his stuff. He's going to be probably the most nonchalant winner when he does actually cross the line first. He's just going to go, I won today.
He is very calm and collected.
Almost to a fault. Yeah. But yeah, world beat Oscar Piastri yet again. And you know, I better results are coming. I mean, he's going to learn from that restart. He's going to learn from his time being up there. It was good to see. And for McLaren as a team, it was good for them to make hay here, because as we turn the page and move into the actual race, they were clearly going into it on the back foot, because they had set up their car basically for wet conditions. They'd added some extra downforce. They left their wing angle a bit higher than a lot of other teams did. And so what it meant throughout even the course of the qualifying and even in the sprint race, it was this weird, odd dynamic. They would suffer in the first sector, but were absolutely mega in the second sector. And it was like this rubber band of timing. And then the third sector was kind of in the middle, so you couldn't really tell. So when you're watching these time trial laps and you're going, okay, he's 3/10 down in the first sector, that's usually game over. But then he comes back and he's 7/10 up in the second sector. And I'm like, wait a minute, he might pull this off here. And then, you know, the third sector is just kind of in the middle there. So, yeah, it was very hard to try to predict where their race pace was going to be, because they had no long running. They had two wet laps in practice. The entire first, the only practice of the weekend was a complete washout. So the race itself was literally going into the unknown. And I think that's a good place where we'll actually take our break here, because I need to refresh my vocal cords a little bit. And so we'll pay a bill or two. We'll take a quick break. We'll break down the race. And then we'll kind of get into the standings and the rest of it kind of after that. So hold those thoughts for the Belgian Grand Prix and come on back.
You are listening to the Outlap F1 podcast, and we'll be right back after this quick pit stop.
All right, welcome back in. This is season 5, episode number 24 of the Outlap F1 podcast. It's our Belgian GP race review. You've got Andy, and I'm along with Cody tonight. And we have done a good job of setting the table. We've talked about the sprint shootout, the actual qualifying, and now we'll actually finally be able to get into the main event of the weekend, the race on Sunday. So we will go lights out and hop into that. Turned out to be, at least starting, it was in dry conditions. So that meant some teams were on the back foot and other teams were doing a lot better. But we will start with our back markers. And lap one was not very kind to two drivers. Those would being Oscar Piastri, who had a great Saturday, not a really great Sunday. 500 meters in his race was basically over in the first corner. He did not finish. Neither did Carlos Sainz, although he did keep going for a while. Did get some laps in, but he ultimately succumbed to the same damage from that first lap incident with Piastri. He did not finish. P18 was Nico Hülkenberg. P17, Logan Sargeant. P16 was Daniel Ricciardo. P15 was Kevin Magnussen. P14 was Alex Albon. P14 was Alex Albon. And P13 was Zhou Guanyu. Cody, significant thoughts on the backmarkers?
I do feel really bad for Oscar Piastri and Carlos Sainz, especially Piastri after he had such a nice Saturday. I don't think either driver was really particularly at fault for the incident. It was just your run-of-the-mill, lap one, coming off the grid, everyone is very bunched up, everyone's jockeying for position, and you've got that hairpin for the first turn, so everyone's squeezing into that, and it pretty much just ended up that they ran out of room. Oscar Piastri got squeezed against the wall by Carlos Sainz. Carlos Sainz ended up looking like he had damage that was very similar to what Checo Perez had in the sprint shootout, and it seemed to have a very similar effect on his car, because, you know, Piastri, I don't think he didn't even make it around the full lap, right? He ended up pulling off to the side.
He never even got out of the second sector, actually, before he finally found a marshal post and stopped the car.
And Carlos Sainz, on the other hand, he makes it all the way back around, and all the commentators are saying, yeah, he's probably done. And he pulls in, and they throw on some new tires, and they send it back out. And I was like, okay, are you sure? Like, I know we're going into the summer break, but you don't really want to put too much more wear and tear on this stuff, do you? And they left him out there for 20 laps as he's jockeying for position with Logan Sargeant at the back of the field. And I was like, come on, guys, he's dead. Like, just let it be over with. And Meanwhile, you've got Oscar Piastri being like, "Oh, I got an early summer break." So, yeah, very different ways that their race progressed after that first incident. Other than that, I don't really think I have anything particularly notable about the backmarkers, other than Alex Albon's 14th position does not really seem to do his performance throughout the race justice. It seemed like the whole race was watching Alex Albon pass people. It was quite exciting, and it's a little too bad that he didn't actually have anything to show for it at the end.
Yeah, I think, Albon ended up basically going on almost a three-stop strategy, as it kind of turned out, and I think it was that extra stop that pretty much kind of took him out of the running, and nobody else went with him. Otherwise, I think had some other teams tried to do the same three-stopper, try to be a little more racy on at least race pace, maybe you would have seen him do better. But yeah, the Williams in a straight line, Sector 1 and Sector 3, very nice. Very nice. Made it nice and easy for him to overtake, especially coming out of Al Rouge, going into Radion, going into that corner there. Yeah, very, very well. Like I said, in a straight line, that Williams is as competitive as anybody. And Albon was driving it really well. But I think the only bugaboo with that car is the tire wear. And at least they decided not to try to hang out on the last set of tires. He comes in with about 10 laps to go, and I said, well, if you're going to do that, that's probably when you should. He did get – but it dropped him all the way to, like, 18th, 19th place. So he did pass four or five cars even trying to come back from that, but he only manages to get back to P14. So probably not reflective of his overall pace. But because we had no practice running, nobody knew what any of the long run anything was going to be, into this race. So, you know, you were definitely going into the unknown. As to the Piastri Sainz incident, I saw a nice breakdown from, I think, Anthony Davidson in the post-race show on Sky, or the ESPN3 post-race show that you can get here in the US. He kind of, you look at it from Piastri's perspective, and there's a point at which it makes sense for him to be on the inside. It looked like there was definitely going to be a gap, tries to shoot it in there. But at the same time, two things happen. Sainz is now worried about Hamilton on his outside, and Sainz locks up. So he loses a bit of control and ends up kind of sliding into that open space. And Davidson said it pretty good. 3 into 2 just doesn't go, and that's basically what happened. So I don't necessarily think it was a fault of anybody. I mean, Sainz in the post-race was very critical of Piastri's driving. Piastri said, he turned into me. I think it's probably a combination of the two, but I don't think there was any clearly, oh, that was terrible. It's a lap one incident at the LeSource hairpin. I mean, they happen all the time. That's one of the things that I got nervous about when they qualified only there. And you're like, okay, this is a McLaren car that sometimes can't get out of Q1 in other rounds during the year. Now they're in P6 and 7. He comes up to P5 because of the Verstappen penalty. That should be okay. But that's the danger zone. It's that 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 position where you always see – you tend to see lap one incidents, and I think they just got caught out by it. All right, so we will now move into the midfield. P12 saw Valtteri Bottas. P11 saw Pierre Gasly. P10 was Yuki Tsunoda. P9 was Lance Stroll. P8 was Esteban Ocon. P7 was Lando Norris. P6 was George Russell. P5, Fernando Alonso. So good rally for the Aston Martin front man there, and P4 was Lewis Hamilton in the Mercedes. Thought this was a fascinating midfield throughout the course of the race, but Cody, what's your thought?
It definitely shifted around quite a bit. I seem to remember that Yuki Tsunoda was up as high as like 6th place at one point, and I was thinking he was on for a really impressive finish. Obviously, by the end, things kind of evened out to the status quo a little bit more, and he seems to have his name on that P10, P11 position. So nice that he got the P10 this time and actually got a point out of it. Lewis Hamilton, I think, finished pretty much right where I was expecting him to, just outside of the podium, which, a little too bad for him. I like seeing Lewis finish up front, but fourth is definitely not bad at all. Also good to see Fernando Alonso having a really good finish after these past couple of races where it's looked like the you know, Aston Martin is losing the edge that they had at the beginning of the season. You know, P5 is not quite as well as he was doing at the beginning, but it's still very good. It's, you know, lots of points for him. So I'm glad to see him back up there. And George Russell making another pretty good drive from behind. Where did he qualify? Actually, no, not that far behind. Just just a little bit up from where he started, I think. But yeah, George Russell doing all right as well. And I'll let you take care of Norris.
Yeah, I mean, Lando's day was one of the. I've been watching a lot of Formula One races. I've seen a lot of things. I've never seen something what happened to him. First off, the first stint where the old McLaren car, the Bahrain car, came back, where it didn't matter what they tried to do. They clearly got caught out by the setup. And the first lap, he's getting overtaken even before the DRS zone. So that first sector was just killer for them. He's going backwards. They box him after like six laps. They tried to put him on a set of hard tires. Now, I understand that call at that point. You know, the British Grand Prix, they put him on the hard tires. The car came back to life. We didn't know what the hard tire was going to do here. So, you know, what have you got to lose at that point? The problem was with that thinking was they were trying to get him in clean air. Well, three quarters of the rest of the midfield actually also came in right after that. So he's back in another train of cars where it's the same problem where, okay, he couldn't get enough clean air to do anything in the middle sector where the car was still really good. So he couldn't use whatever pace he had, and he's just dropping like a stone. Like, he keeps cycling back up out of like P14, and then he'd drop again to P15 and P16. And then they finally did what I thought that they should have done at the start of the race, because they started it on mediums. I thought they finally said, well, we might as well throw a set of softs on and see what the hell that does. And so they came in, they did that, and he goes back out and he had decent pace. And then, from like manna from heaven, the cloud opens up and there's just enough rain to make that car come back to life. I've never seen anything like that. By lap 11, my hat was across the room. It was gone, okay? And I'm sitting there going, he's going to finish last on the road. There's no way this gets any better from here. And then all of a sudden, that the rain starts. That car, the middle sector came alive. He starts, he gets back around Logan Sargeant. He gets back around Joe Grandview. He gets back around Bottas. These are all guys who passed him earlier, by the way. And then he comes up on this gaggle of cars who are then all seeing what Lando was doing. So they are all boxing at the same time. And lo and behold, he cycles himself back up to P7. And there's two significant things that happen. One, Russell gets past him and goes down the road. So that actually gave Lando some clean air. And the other thing was he had Lance Stroll behind him, and Aston Martin were telling Stroll to lift and coast. So he wasn't able to really close that gap down anymore. And it meant that every time Lando would lose time in the first sector, he would gain it back in the second sector because he had enough clean air with which to do it. The only question was, well, he comes in, I think, on lap 17, puts a set of soft tires on, and then the team goes about 20 laps later, we think the best idea is for you to hang it out and see if you can get this to the end of the race. And Lando goes, okay. So there was some interesting back and forth between the team there. And then eventually Lando just goes, okay, all good, mate. Like, that was the same response he gave at the British Grand Prix, where he goes, it's fine. I don't care. I'm just going to do it. And that's what he did. He put his head down. He kept it there. By the time of the also overtaking of many people, Esteban Ocon, who went from P14 to P8, gets into P8. He literally ran out of laps. So Lando had just enough to come back to P7. I've never seen anything like that. That car was done after the first third of that race. And somehow it comes back there. I've read articles that said he didn't know how he did it. I watched it. I still don't get it either. But, you know, it was a combination of the weather, the cool temperatures. The car came back to him, and then he got confident in it and was able to get it there. So you look at the score sheet, it doesn't look like much, but he was all the way down in P19 at one point, last on the road, and comes all the way back to P7. So I kind of equate that to this is like a pitcher who's learning how to pitch when his stuff isn't the best. So, you know, maybe he grows from this and learns something from it. But, whoo, what a stressful watch. All right. I already talked kind of about Ocon. Talked a little bit about Yuki Tsunoda. You talked about Tsunoda as well. I was glad to see that he ended up getting the point after being told by everybody in the media that he was the number two driver at AlphaTauri. Oof. He's the only one that manages to score points so far. Now, I don't think that that's not a fair criticism of Ricciardo, considering this is his second race. But interesting to see that dynamic at least moving forward. That looks to be at least a response from the Yuki side of things. So we'll watch that as we go forward. All right, and then we get into the podium. P3 was Charles Leclerc. Who started on pole but was unable to make that stick. P2 was Sergio Perez. So, good results for Red Bull. And, of course, Max Verstappen, 22 and 0.305 seconds up the road. Started in sixth. He didn't care. On that other level. Wow. Cody, thoughts on the podium?
Pretty much, at least for the top two, went exactly how I think most of us were figuring it would. That Red Bull car is insane. And I didn't really mention this for when we were talking about the sprint, but they had that safety car about halfway through the sprint, right? And so there's only 5-6 laps left by the time they get going again. And in that, after Max Verstappen got around Oscar Piastri, he managed to finish in just that short amount of time, 6 seconds in front. So about a second a lap. So I'm not really too surprised that Max finished way, way out in front, even in front of his teammate. And it looked like in the very beginning there, because, you know, Max had the grid penalty, that, Charles and Perez got away, and then Perez makes it around Leclerc. And it seemed like, at least for a little while there, that it was getting to be a little bit of a DRS train. It took Max a lot longer than I was expecting for him to get to the front. I think it was like 17 laps, something like that. But man, once he got there, he's just pulling away. I mean, Perez is good, but Max is making it look like a piece of cake. And I gotta love his attitude during the race and his, you know, banter with his race engineer. He's like trying to persuade him, I think we've got enough gap to take another pit stop. I really want to come in and get that pit stop and take that fastest lap. And they're like, no, not this time, Max. You gotta stick with it. Oh, but this, that, no, Max. So he's making it look so easy. He's gotta be getting like bored when he's getting that far out in front. But I mean, more power to him. He's making it look easy and he's absolutely running away with it. Very excited to see Charles up there as well. It's good to see Ferrari at least every once in a while coming through with the podium here and getting some good points. And I'm sure it's probably what's keeping Charles sane right now with how things have gone the past couple years with Ferrari. He's kind of gone way down and then way back up and then way back down again. So he's hanging on though and had a good performance.
Yeah, I think if you're a Ferrari fan overall, you're encouraged by the relative pace of the car, you know, around that track. I thought, you know, overall in just about all the sessions, including the sprint shootout, sprint and everything else, their overall pace, I think, was pretty good this weekend. So they're not that far off. You know, their problem is execution and making decisions. And to their credit, you know, either they just decided because nobody else came in, at least they didn't like try to come in and put inters on. That would have been like the ultimate Ferrari move, but that didn't end up happening because it got wet, but it didn't get wet enough necessarily for that. So the right tire at the right time was to be on a nice set of softs. And that's pretty much where everybody ended up going to, which was, you know, usually you don't see a lot of soft tire running, especially with a lap as long as here. I guess that was the place to be was there. And good on Ferrari for getting that right. I think Charles had kind of a pretty lonely race after the first few laps, you know, once the Red Bulls kind of went up the road. But they were, I would say Ferrari was probably the second quickest car here throughout the course of the weekend. So, you know, they still got it. You know, if they can, you know, make their own strategy decisions and figure out and stop letting Carlos Sainz run the team from the behind the wheel, maybe they got something. So, I mean, they're going to be around. They'll be in the fight. You know, I think this battle, you know, for who's going to be the second fastest team, you're going to see certain tracks it's going to be a Ferrari, certain tracks Mercedes, certain tracks maybe McLaren, other tracks maybe Aston Martin again, you know, because they're gonna rally and come back. And, you know, you look at what Alonso did, and that was good to see after he – and the other thing, at least I would say with this sprint weekend, much more than anything, performance in the sprint necessarily didn't translate over to performance in the race. Now, you had dramatically different weather. And that's something I just kind of wanted to pose the question. When we look at the sprint format overall, one of the things now, I granted, I know what hat I'm wearing and I understand where it's going to sound like this comes from, but should we look at the Parc Fermé rules when you make a decision on a Friday in dramatically different conditions to maybe giving some sort of a provision? I was thinking about it, like what I would do to make it at least the race that a little bit more exciting or give the teams a better fighting chance would be, okay, give them a 15-minute warm-up session, and that you then set your car up, and after that you like re-park Fermé, or it's Parc Fermé part two or something like that.
So you're saying Parc Fermé again, like after the sprint but before the race?
Right. Like you can break Parc Fermé after the sprint. On the Sunday morning, you do literally maybe a 15-minute session, maybe only a couple laps. But it's enough to where you can change your setup. Maybe then, you know, some of these teams that went for the really wet setup or the really dry setup, you know, don't get caught out quite as much. Because, you know, you saw in the different conditions, that's one of the things when you watch, especially changing conditions, you see what cars are good when. Like AlphaTauri was really good. In the middle of the wet track, and then the McLaren was really good as it was drying out, and then as it dried out, it wasn't so good anymore. You know, so I mean, you could really kind of see that. I would almost love to give that piece of strategy back to the team somehow, especially when you're talking about a weekend like this where it's such a different change of conditions. That might be one way to make it a little better, at least on Sunday.
Yeah, because like you said, for this weekend, you've got most of the really wet weather coming in on Friday and Saturday. So if you are Parc Fermé and you're going to be stuck with that setup, of course you're going to be setting up for the wetter weather to try to improve your standing in qualifying, improve your standing in the sprint, and hope to God that it ends up being a wet Sunday, which it didn't. So I agree that it would be nice to at least give the teams some amount of wiggle room at the very least on sprint weekends where you might have racing conditions and completely different weather conditions. And you want to let them have a little bit more ability to get their car in the window, because you ended up seeing with McLaren that, you know, their car looked great in the wet when they did the qualifying, when they did the sprint. And then on Sunday, it was going nowhere until they got that little bit of rain. And it would have been cool to see Lando potentially be a little more competitive throughout the whole race if they'd had that little window to really dial in the car for drier conditions.
And maybe somebody else gets to, you know, maybe it's not 22 seconds up the road with Max. You know,
I'm pretty sure it would still be 22 seconds up the road.
It could, this year it very well could be. It just seems like that's where everybody's going. I saw one of the guys who actually follows the show as a Canadian Sports Center anchor, and I'm going to butcher his last name. It's Tim Haunany or something like that. And he had a clip that he actually posted on his account where he's talking about that he thought it was strange that where everybody's clawed back this year against Red Bull has been over one lap, but they haven't been able to figure out the race pace. And I think that goes to a couple different things. I think that goes to, you know, one, these practice sessions, you don't get a really long run. Like, nobody knew you could do 30-some laps on a set of soft tires until there it was in the race. So I'm wondering, you know, do teams have to maybe change their run plan, change their thinking a little bit to try to close this gap to the Red Bull? But, you know, we'll see kind of how it goes throughout the course of the rest of this season. It sounds to me like most teams are just saying, you know, we're going to get you in 24 if we're going to get you at all.
Yeah, hopefully. I'm hoping that it gets a little more competitive because it's so cool to see, you know, this season in its own way feels kind of historic because Max is having just such a lights out crazy run. It makes you think of some of the extremely dominant seasons of past from, you know, Ayrton Senna and Alan Prost, McLaren, Michael Schumacher at Ferrari days, some of Lewis Hamilton's seasons with Mercedes. Like, it is incredible dominance, but that doesn't make for exciting races week in and week out. So I'm hoping that the teams figure it out. The one lap pace thing, you know, over one lap, you're not worried about destroying your tires so much. You're going to go all out and, you know, whatever happens, happens. And I think the Red Bull's just able to keep that pace going without destroying the tires, which you've said many times before. And if the teams can figure out how to do that, you know, how to make it so that they're able to go that fast but not have such incredible downforce that it's just destroying the tires after, you know, 10, 20 laps, I think it'll definitely even out a lot more.
All right, very good. And I think you made a lot of sense right there. All right, so we will leave the Belgian Grand Prix there. That's enough of our takes. So we will now update the standings. I think we see Red Bulls out in front. So Cody, take a crack at the drivers, and then I'll come in and do the teams.
All right. In first place, as of the Belgian Grand Prix, absolutely no one's surprised, and you know, I'm pretty sure it's a mathematical impossibility after this race. Max Verstappen out in front, first place, driving for Red Bull with a whopping 314 points. Sergio Perez behind him, the other Red Bull driver, coming through with 189, still quite respectable. Fernando Alonso still holding on to that third place with Aston Martin, just barely. He is at 149 points. Meanwhile, Lewis Hamilton is right behind him in fourth place, driving for Mercedes with 148 points. Fifth place is Charles Leclerc with Ferrari at 99 points. And tied with him on points, but behind him on a tiebreaker, is George Russell, driving for Mercedes, also with 99 points. Carlos Sainz coming through in seventh place, also with Ferrari. He is at 92 points. Lando Norris making a great comeback, it seems. He is up to eighth place in the standings, driving for McLaren, and he's at 69 points. So a little bit of a gap there between Ferrari and McLaren, but I'm hoping Norris can close that gap. Ninth place is Lance Stroll, driving for Aston Martin, and he's back with 47 points. And then rounding out the top 10, Esteban Ocon, driving for Alpine, with 35 points.
Yeah, and two postscripts. We usually don't do anything beyond the top 10. P11 is Oscar Piastri, who had on Saturday claimed broken into the top 10, only to have it taken away. Piastri's on 34, so he's only 1 point out of that top 10. So look for him to break his way in there. And then the other postscript, unfortunately, American fans, Logan Sargeant will not be the 2023 Drivers' World Champion. He has been mathematically eliminated.
Darn.
Ugh. Yeah, shucky darn on that one. All right, in terms of the team standings, to no one's surprise, Red Bull Racing powertrains in another universe. I don't know what – I got to think of new words to talk about this. Another dimension, I guess, 503 points. In second place is Mercedes. They check in 247 points. Third place is Aston Martin on 196. Fourth place is Ferrari right on their tail now on 191. Fifth place, now into the triple digits. Didn't ever think we were going to get there this year. McLaren, Mercedes, they check in 103 points. Sixth place is Alpine. They move up to 57 points, so they score some points this weekend. Kudos to Gasly. We didn't mention this in the sprint. Kudos to Gasly, P3 in the sprint, on for a team that needed a result. So good on them. As calm as Piastri was, Gasly made up for it in exuberance. So I guess that's kind of the balance there. But seventh place, Williams, Mercedes, they check in with 11 points. They are still tied, but have the tiebreaker against Haas, who also check in on 11 points. Ninth place is Alfa Romeo. They are on 9 points and now moving up to 3 points. Yuki Tsunoda and AlphaTauri Red Bull Racing Powertrains, excuse me. They check in with P10 with the 3 points. All right, so we've had our takes on the Belgian Grand Prix. We open it up to the fan email segment. Only had one taker this time. I wonder if that has something to do with what a certain person is doing to our favorite social media platform. But anyway, Cody, of course, I'm not going to stop this until he's gone. Anyway, Cody, take it away.
All right, our fan email comes from Rachel Fleming. Thank you, Rachel. And she says, So I was going to propose a new concept for F1 since Max changed his gearbox this weekend, dropped down five places on the grid, and it made no difference whatsoever. How about teams cannot change parts on the car? When they wear out, which would increase unreliability in a race. However, my dad pointed out one very obvious flaw: Red Bull are the most reliable car, so that won't stop Max either. So as for the race itself, it was quite a good race, not taking the Red Bulls into account. Credit to Russell for doing nearly half of the race on softs, but I have 0% sympathy for Carlos Sainz since he took out Oscar. Where was Oscar supposed to go? And then seemed to not get punished by the stewards. Then again, he drives for Ferrari. They probably thought he was punished enough. anyway, we have a good break from the Max Verstappen show featuring 19 other drivers. Very funny email.
it feels like that sometimes where it is the Max Verstappen variety hour, especially with some of the team radio back and forth, that they're broadcasting more and more, because what else are you going to do? You got to try to create drama somewhere. So yeah. If I'm taking the email a little more seriously, I don't think it's a good idea to start going back to busted gearboxes and, big plumes of smoke coming out of a car. That to me, that's no fun. Like, I want somebody I am not a fan of Max. I've never been really a big supporter of his. I respect the talent a lot, but what I want to see is somebody beat him. I want one of these teams with this set of regulations to come on up and just beat him at his own game for once. And it sucks that you might not get the chance to see it this season, because I think you're right. I think the only thing that stops Red Bull from taking all 22 races this year is going to be some sort of a mechanical issue, because I think you're probably right about that, because it's definitely it's in play, and for every race that gets kicked off the board, we get one step closer to it. So that will be at least something to watch, because you'll never get a chance to probably ever see that ever happen again. But the other thing is I want somebody to beat him. I want somebody to knock Christian Horner off of his high horse a little bit, and have Netflix film it and let's watch that, as opposed to what we're getting this season, because he's just the preening peacock, and I guess he deserves it. I mean, what the hell? You got the greatest aerodynamicist who ever lived working for your team, and you've got him wrapped up for a very long time, it looks like. So, kudos to that.
Oh, man. What I want, if we can't see a race this year where Red Bull doesn't win, what I want to see is a Max Verstappen 20th to 1st victory. I want to see him crash in like Q1, start from 20th position with like a brand new car, and make it back to first by the end of the race. I think that would be quite the statement. It would be terrifying, but it would be really interesting.
Well, you'd finally get the answer to the question: have we seen Max go full on, full out in a race yet this season? And I don't know that we necessarily have.
Yeah,
we've seen bits of it, like that qualifying in Monaco, maybe even the sprint shootout qualifying here, he was pushed, where it was really, really close. But beyond that, I mean, when have you really said Max is really under pressure and under stress? He hasn't been. So, it might take something like that where he has to start way in the back. Maybe it's a new Honda engine that they have to take grid penalties for or something like that has to end up happening to force it to happen. But he could easily slice and dice his way through the field. I think he would do that pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. At least that's where the car is right now. All right. So we will transition into our awards. As is tradition for us, we start with the rubbish. So Cody, I'll let you go first, and then I'll piggyback on top of your point.
Yeah, I think we're going to be, looks like we might be like-minded on this rubbish award. I'm going to go with the FIA based on the call that at first it was too wet to start the sessions, and then it was too dry for the full wets, or to call the race wet, or the session wet. So you need to have some consistency. Is it wet or is it not wet? If you're going to delay a session because it's wet, you should make the session wet. And you shouldn't force drivers who want to try out the slicks to go out on anything other than the soft. I thought it was a little ridiculous. Definitely wasn't the first the only fault of the FIA this weekend either. Andy, what else you got to say on that one?
Well, you heard me kind of rant about this earlier, but again, my rubbish will go out to the FIA, specifically to this ridiculous call that they made on Saturday morning. And I thought the FIA just wanted to come and enforce the rules that were agreed to, and not be trying to make their own or trying not to set precedent. So what the actual hell was that on Saturday morning? You delay the session for over 30 minutes because it's too wet, right? I agree with that call. But then you tell the teams it's the dry tire regulations? Stop, for the love of God. Stop trying to push this mandatory tire and mandatory session. Crap. The teams know what they want to do. If they want to have an extra set of soft tires, then change. And you don't want to spend any more money because it costs too much to transport them around. Take a set of hards or take a set of mediums away from them and let them manage it throughout the course of the rest of the sessions. But give them what they need to, so we can actually see the fun part of the weekend, which is qualifying. To ask Aston Martin and Lance Stroll to go out there on a set of mediums, which nobody had ran in a cold, wet Spa track, was asking, and you got exactly what you were asking for. You got a wreck. So I guess that's what you wanted. So congratulations. But that was absolute crap. That made no sense. All right. And therefore, it should go in the bin. And that's where we put the rubbish. All right. Moving on. Analysis paralysis. Why do I have a funny feeling I'm about to double up here? But Cody, I'll let you go first yet again. What'd you think?
I'm going to go in a little bit of a different direction with analysis paralysis. Not too much different, just different from the FIA. I do love picking on Ferrari, and so I'm going to go with Ferrari on this one, just for the little reason that they, you know, we had the lap one incident with Sainz and Piastri. Sainz had very similar damage to what Perez had in the sprint, and he had almost the same outcome where the car was just falling back like a rock. And yet Ferrari decided they were going to leave him out there for almost half the race. For what reason, I don't know. Maybe they're trying to collect some data going into the summer break. But to me, there's no sense in wearing out the parts on the car just to compete with, you know, the last place position. And, you know, eventually they seem to get the message, and they brought him in and retired the car. But I was amazed it took as long as it did. So I'm giving analysis paralysis to Ferrari.
Well, once I get the FIA in my sights, it's hard to get them out of there. So I'm giving this to the FIA yet again for what I'm calling its really, really bad, no good Saturday, which culminated in this 5-second penalty against Lewis Hamilton that I just don't get. I just don't get as a race fan. I don't get as someone who likes to watch good, hard-nosed, wheel-to-wheel racing. I love IndyCar because they can beat and bang a little bit on each other, and it's fine. So I just don't get it. That was good, hard racing. That's exactly what you wanted to have. That's the whole point of the sprint. What is it with cars on the inside that you don't like? Like, this is not the first time we've done this. I've talked about it every time. I guess I'll keep talking about it till I'm blue in the face. And why is it always seems it's always Sergio Perez on the outside or a Red Bull? But interesting. Not culminating in a conspiracy theory yet, but I didn't like that call. Let's put it that way. All right, so moving from the analysis paralysis into the dark horse of the day, Cody, who'd you have?
I had Yuki Tsunoda for my dark horse, mostly because that AlphaTauri car seems to be flirting with being the worst car this year. It's definitely they definitely have the fewest points on the year so far. And so it's another point for Yuki Tsunoda, who scored all three of the lonesome points for AlphaTauri. And I thought for sure he wasn't going to be able to do it this weekend. So it was really nice to see him, you know, squeeze into that 10th place. I was really hoping he was going to have a better finish than even that, because he was running up a little higher than that at one point. And I was thinking, oh man, he's gonna put all of the haters to rest. Everyone who's looking at Daniel Ricciardo thinking that he's going to sneak on by Yuki and take that second Red Bull seat away from Perez. Yuki's not going down without a fight. So it's good to see. And he is my dark horse.
All right, good pick. I'm going to go total homer on this one. I'm going to give it to Lando Norris simply because he recovers from P19. That's how bad that first stint really was. So P19, he puts the soft tires on, and he rallies all the way from there to P7. And like I said before, that's to me like a pitcher without his best stuff and finding a way in the middle of the pressure just to find a way to get through it. An honorable mention to one Oscar Piastri for the sprint shootout and his performance in the sprint race. What could have been without that Alonso safety car? I would have loved to have watched that. Mm-hmm. Sadly, we didn't get a chance to see it. But that's just kind of how the cookie crumbles sometimes. But not the best day for McLaren, but a day that as a fan I will take and I will say, okay, on to the next. All right. So driver of the day, is there any doubt who's going to get this one? Cody, I'll give it to you. What's your take?
I'm going with Max. Super Max, it's automatic. Once he gets into the lead, he just takes off down the road and nobody can do anything about it. I usually try to go with a different driver than Max if there's some particularly standout performances. There were definitely some good ones this time, but I think 22 seconds out in front of his teammate driving the same car definitely lends to Max being one of the best that there is. So he is my driver of the day.
Yeah. In another dimension, you know, reality, fathom, whatever you want to call it. That's where he is. And nobody's dared to come near him this season. Max Verstappen, driver of the day, really no argument there. All right. So we did do predictions and I thought I'd put in my research, but the sun shone brightly on you, Cody. It came out right at the right times for you. You smoked me this weekend, man. You finished with 7 points. You got the pole sitter, quali time, P1 podium, P2 podium, fastest lap time, the prop bet, because we saw the wet tires on Saturday and not Sunday. And you also got P1 on the sprint podium just to boot. I finished the weekend with a lowly 3 points. And all mine were Max Verstappen picks. Pole sitter, P1 podium, and P1 in the sprint. So if it wasn't for that, I don't know, man. But on a good note, my F1 fantasy team had quite the weekend. So nice. I had Max and Checo and Lando. So I think I had a pretty good weekend fantasy-wise.
Very nice.
But that's a small consolation. I think you're up now 14-6 or something like that. I'll check the official scoring, but you're increased your lead. Wherever it was, you've increased it this weekend. So I tip my cap, sir. Nice job.
Thank you.
All right. So we now have a break. We have a summer break. We did this on a Monday night because we wanted to see if there was any other big major news stories like last year. Looked like we got our big major news story with the Alpine stuff. Didn't look like anything else really broke. So thoughts on the break, and we got a ways before we reconvene, but we will be reconvening in Zandvoort.
Don't worry, we're going to get more big news tomorrow.
that is the way that it tends to work.
Yeah.
That is definitely the way that it tends to work, as I'm posting the episode.
I'm going to miss Formula One for the next month. On the plus side, it's I'm going fishing with the old man for a week this month, so at least won't be any effect on the F1 schedule for me. I'm just going to go enjoy some fishing, and then by the time I come back, F1 will be back pretty much. So, glad to not have to miss anything.
It'll be nice to actually try to get some regular sleep over the course of the weekend because, you know, especially when they're in Europe, sometimes, you know, you got to get up for the sprint shootout. It's a ridiculous time. The dawn's early light and all that. So I will enjoy some uninterrupted circadian rhythm time over the course of the break. But I'm sure I will be missing my F1. But there is IndyCar. They're going to Nashville, which was where I got a chance to meet Deanna and, you know, the rest of the guys for the first time. If you have the opportunity to go, even though it's going to be probably hotter than hell, I would highly recommend it. Nashville is a great town. They embrace the IndyCar experience. They go racing over that Veterans Bridge. And it's usually a really incident-filled, crazy, screwed-up kind of race where anybody can win. So it doesn't really matter even where you qualify. So, go check that out. I'm thinking about maybe if I may want to go to St. Louis again this year. for IndyCar, but it's in the middle of the day. Like last year was great because it was a night race. Even it was hot during the day.
St. Louis is the last oval race, right?
I believe. Yeah, the Gateway Oval.
If you go to that, you might get to see something interesting, which would be the possibility of Joseph Newgarden winning every oval race in the season.
That's true. So there's lots of good stories in IndyCar. So that's going to be kind of where my racing focus. I think MotoGP is actually back this week too. So there'd be some fun with that. We'll see how much I want to get up for that. But there's some nice on-demand programming that allows me to kind of catch up with MotoGP when it's, you know, light out here in the U.S. So I'm sure we'll find some fast stuff to keep me occupied during the break. Hope everybody else has a great break. Enjoy yourselves. And hopefully when we reconvene, we'll get some teams with hopefully some better upgrades. I know the battle for P1 is pretty much over, but the battles up and down the grid are still going to be going on, and we will be here covering all of it. So for our entire team, thank you for sticking with us through the entire first half of the season, and we'll see you in a little bit. But as always, folks, may all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 Podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at Outlap F1 Podcast or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support and we'll see you on the next one.